Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome back to an adventure in history. We're so happy you once again decided to join us. And we have a very cool guest tonight.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah, we do. We talked him into it at the top of the hill in Astoria, right before musical chairs.
Musical stairs.
Stairs, musical chairs.
That's a game that you're... Kids played in preschool.
Yes. Musical stairs. But Dan Supple's joining us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Glad you joined us. Glad we talked you into it.
And if we're sounding a little discombobulated, it's because last week's guest, Jeff Daly, the evil genius, amazing, one step from being a supervillain, Jeff Daly, realized that we are just recording in the drunk tank at the Heritage Museum. And we say drunk tank because this used to be the City Hall and the police department was in the basement.
Yep.
And we really haven't tricked it out like a studio. So he came in and he added some things that in theory make it more like a sound studio.
We might have to share some pictures on social media so people can see what we're talking about.
Maybe
we show the drain and the tricked out microphone setting.
Alana's very upset there's a drain in the middle of the floor directly beneath the tables that we're sitting at, because this was the drunk tank and it was so people could vomit and it would go towards the center of the room and out the drain, and it bothers her.
It does.
A great deal.
It does. So that leads us to my word of the day.
This oh my gosh, noun. We're jumping right into it.
This is a noun, and you can take a guess too. It's historic words, lost words that went away for a reason, and we're thinking about bringing them back. And this one is akrasia.
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 And it's a noun.
Yes.
I think akrasia is an absurd idea.
Close. It is. That's almost it, Mac. Dan, any guess?
I don't have a guess
akrasia.
For that one.
Okay, this is the act of knowing you shouldn't be doing something, but doing it anyway. That was an akrasia idea. And deliberately acting against any and all good judgment. That is included in the definition. I like that little addendum to
yes.
it.
Yes, now that word could come back.
Akrasia.
Akrasia.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we have akrasia sort of ideas all the time.
I'm going to try that one sometime in the next week.
Okay.
I'm going to try to remember to actually use that one.
Let's keep going.
All right. We got things to plug because this is going to be a good show. So
upcoming this week, there's so many fun things to do for families. I just wanted to make sure everyone knows that Warrenton Fall Festival is happening on Saturday, 12 to 4. Then you can drive south to Seaside, where Seaside is doing its Seaside Fall Fun Fest. And that's at the Bob Chisholm Center, and it's 4 to 6. So you can go from one to the other. Free, fun activities for the kids. So Warrenton City Park, 12 to 4, and then 4 to 6 for the Seaside Fall Fun.
Excellent.
Fest. Yes.
And then Thursday night, the 17th, is our Thursday Night Talks.
Fun.
The Historical Society. And we had a record break for last time.
Did you really?
152 people were in the room. It was nuts. It was crazy.
And what was the topic again?
Last month, it was the KKK.
Oh, okay. Yep.
By Dr. Chelsea Vaughn from the Historical Society. And this week, it's going to be about the gutter party.
Oh, I love it.
I know you would. And it's going to be Joanna Ogden who's going to speak. She just wrote a book from her original research that discovered that the gutter party actually started here in Astoria in 1913.
For more on that, check our archives.
On the 17th, this Thursday night at Fort George Brewery at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6, so you can get a cool, refreshing beverage and maybe something to eat if you want to. And then get it on your calendars. Talking Tombstones, always the last Sunday in October. And this year, it's on the 27th of October, 1 o'clock at Greenwood Cemetery, one of my favorites.
Isn't it your favorite?
It is my favorite,
yeah,
I have to admit.
Just say it.
The stones are amazing. The stories are great. And this year, it's our 19th year of doing this, though we had 2 years off in the middle, so technically it should be our 21st year.
Okay.
But for 19. Actual presentations, the 19th time we've done this, and this year, Hooking Tombstones, 19 Grave Mistakes.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's our subtitle. All right, let's get to our history highlights, because there's a lot of questions and a lot of fun topics that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But history highlights, these are things that happen on October 14th, tomorrow. So we're going to whip through them really fast. 1834, the first African-American granted a U.S. patent. Henry Blair for a corn planter.
Oh.
I like that.
Okay.
Apparently, we did not know how to plant corn before that. 1834, in Philadelphia, Whigs and Democrats stage a gun, stone, and brick battle for control of a Moyamsing Township election, resulting in one death, several injuries, and the burning down of a block of buildings. Can't we just all get along?
Asterisk of things politicians do.
Yeah, Whigs and Democrats just couldn't get along. All right, 1884, George Eastman patents a paper strip photographic film.
Okay. Yeah.
Good for you, George Eastman. 1890, Dwight D. Eisenhower is born. 1912, Theodore Roosevelt is shot in Milwaukee and then still gives like a 2.5 hour speech.
That's awful.
He is bleeding. He is shot in the chest, but his speech is so thick. And then I think he had his like a glass case, his eyeglasses or something. And it the bullet goes through all those and it wounds him and he's actually bleeding. But instead of going to the hospital, he says, I got to go give the speech. And he gives the speech. And that's where the bull moose thing starts. That you can't kill a bull moose.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Good for him. He's always, we like Teddy.
Always good with a quip.
Yes.
1922. I don't know if anybody's going to recognize this but me, because I don't know how widespread this was. It might be an East Coast thing. But 1922, the first Tom McCann shoe store opens on 3rd Avenue in New York City. Now, do either one of you remember Tom McCann shoe stores?
Nope.
I kind of think they became a mall thing at some point.
Tom McCann, no.
Wow, okay. Maybe it's just an East Coast thing. I'm sorry, Gimmeries. If I'd inserted Gimmeries here, everyone would recognize it.
Just a West Coast
thing. Yeah. All right. 1926, A.A. Milne's book Winnie the Pooh is released.
Aw.
Are we fans of Winnie the Pooh?
Of course we are.
All right. Of course we are. 1944, German General Erwin Rommel, a.k.a. the Desert Fox, dies by suicide. Erwin Rommel's an interesting figure.
Okay.
Because he says, I'm a military guy, I'm not a Nazi. And when the biggest plot to kill Hitler comes across, there's the inner circle says, we're going to need you. You are respected by our enemies, that when we kill Hitler, you'll need to be the one that negotiates and basically says you're in charge of Germany now. And he never flat agrees to it, but he's like, well, that makes sense. So when the plot fails, even though he's this beloved general in Germany, when the plot fails and they find out he knew about it, or he knew something was up, they basically say, it's going to be really bad for your family if you want to go out on your own. And that's why he commits suicide.
Oh.
But he's an interesting character. 1947, Chuck Yeager breaks the sound barrier.
Cool.
What? 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. wins the Nobel Peace Prize. 1964, Nikita Khrushchev ousted as premier of the Soviet Union, and Brezhnev replaces him.
Oh, okay.
1980, presidential nominee, not elected yet, presidential nominee, 1980, Ronald Reagan promises to name a woman to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
And we get Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yep. I went to her grade school.
But our history highlight of the day, the thing, was it actually hers or was it just named for her?
No, just named for hers. Of course it's not hers.
I like the idea that she was like working as a Supreme Court justice and teaching.
And running
the
school.
Yeah, local school principal. All right, but our history highlight today, I think had the most impact on history. 1962, Soviet missiles are photographed in Cuba.
Ooh.
They've got missiles pointed right at us.
Leading to...
all kinds of unbelievable things.
Yes.
And we're not going to get into that because I have strong opinions about John F. Kennedy and...
the
Cuban
Bay of Pigs
crisis.
And all that fun stuff. Well, good. Instead, let's rock our way into a new subject with our guest, Dan Supple.
Are we going to start with rocking chairs? Are you jumping right to rocking chairs?
We don't need to start with rocking chairs.
Because that's high on my list.
It is. But let's go back a few years. So, Dan, let's start with, how did your family end up or start in the North Coast or on the North Coast?
My father, when I was born, about 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, he was the general manager of Hawaiian Tuna Packers. So I was born in Astoria. We moved pretty much immediately to Hawaii, and he was a general manager at Hawaiian Tuna Packers. Spent a couple, 2, 3, 4 years there, and then they transferred him to Maryland. So he ran Maryland Tuna Packers, where we kind of get into the baseball stories of we became Oriole fans at a very young age. And we moved back here right at the just before high school and spent pretty much the rest of my time here in Astoria.
So what age were you when you moved from Astoria to Maryland?
Like, well,
four or five.
So you had memories.
Oh, yeah.
There were memories. So when you came back, you were like, oh, I know this place. It wasn't something totally new.
A lot more with Maryland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went to high school here.
Went to high school, graduated from Warrenton High School in 75. Have the privilege of playing with Dwayne Huddleston, the iconic coach from Warrenton. Yeah. I was one of his first classes and actually played with him. So.
And what were the sports that you played?
I played basketball and baseball.
Okay.
Baseball was my love for sure. Yeah.
And what position?
Lots of different positions. I was a pitcher in high school, but I played first and some left field. And
So pitcher and the other positions makes you probably one of the better players on the team.
I was a piece of the puzzle.
Oh, that's so diplomatic.
That's a good baseball answer.
That is a good baseball answer. You're just playing one game at a time.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I was a teammate, and there's nine guys out on that field, and it's hard to be a standout when you're playing with such great players that I got to play with.
So let's talk about baseball. I love this already. I mean, so what were some of the names of your fellow teammates and some of the memories that you just still cherish from that period?
Well, as a kid, you always playing Little League, growing up playing Little League, Babe Ruth, Legion ball, high school ball. As you get to high school ball, your teammates become lifetime friends with you. And there isn't one of us that I've ever met that didn't think that maybe someday they'd have the talent to play in the major leagues. And every kid does. You're out hitting rocks with your dogs, and you know you're hitting them over the power lines, and you're thinking that maybe someday I'll have the talent to play in the major leagues. But I played with Ronnie Dyer, was my catcher. He played down at Oregon State after high school. Rip Puckett, Mike Johnson, the Davis brothers. Played with a lot of great players in high school. And then I went away. I played 2 years down at Marin Junior College. And then I played 2 years at UC Riverside. So that was a step up for sure.
And did you, in those years that you're playing college ball, did you get scouted? Did you think you might make it into professional baseball? Or?
Of course. You keep the dream alive. But there comes a point in time when you're standing on the field with Division I players, you can pretty much see who the next level is. You can see like you would go play, say, Cal State Fullerton or Arizona State or UCLA, and they would have what they would call as their golden boy on that team. And those are the guys that actually have a chance to go on. And you kind of start looking at yourself in the mirror saying, I just don't think I've got the talent to do this.
And are there any names that you remember playing against that you're like, oh, man, that guy hit me hard and now he's in the major leagues or vice versa?
Oh, not so much. Not really. Right. Not really. It's been a long time ago.
Okay. So at that point in college then that this is going through your mind, what then were you thinking about doing next? What were you studying? Where was your life going to take you at that point?
Well, I was always into construction. I always built things with my hands. I got in right after college. I played 1 year of single-A ball here in the Northwest League. And again, it becomes more apparent the further you climb up that ladder, the pyramid gets really tight as you get up towards the top. And if you think about the percentage of players that actually get a shot to play some single A, double A, triple A, much less having a cup of coffee and playing in the major leagues, it's phenomenal. Those guys are just such great athletes. I dropped back and I actually went to work for Clatterboss up on Mount St. Helens when it blew up.
Oh, wow.
So I worked for a couple years up there. Did some construction work, and then I got the job that I retired from for 35 years. I was a general manager down at Astoria Warehousing. We labeled canned salmon from Alaska. So I was always on the mechanical end of it, be it welding, construction, machine installation. So I did that for 35 years.
Oh my goodness. So when you went into that job, how much had it changed since your dad, and how much different was that from what your dad had done?
Not a lot different. Okay. Kind of rewinding here. I mean, I had been in a cannery situation with cans and fish for pretty much my whole life. So it was a pretty natural progression to run Astoria Warehousing. And we had some amazing people that worked at Astoria Warehousing. And I can't tell you how proud I was of what we built there as a team there. We ran it for 35 years, and we were actually the gold standard of our industry. We always wondered how the other labeling outfits did in Seattle that were our competition, and we got to find out. So after 35 years, our companies merged to be closer to the incoming product from Alaska, which is coming into the port of Seattle and the port of Tacoma. So our companies merge. There is a lot of posturing going on in the Alaska fisheries. There is to this day, right this minute. And we had a 300,000 square foot facility up there in Kent. And so we took some of our employees here. We took our business culture from here. We took equipment from here, and we went up and put that Kent facility back together.
I find that fascinating for people that didn't grow up here. It's an amazing thing to think. You are competing, Astoria is competing with, you just named two giant, I mean, Seattle and Tacoma, and to have us in the same conversation, and perhaps even better, that's amazing. And I think people don't quite realize, you know, I think too many newcomers think of us as just a tourist attraction place, and not, we are this vibrant logging and fishing industries. They've been vibrant. They're still vibrant.
I think a lot of it has to do with, we weren't open to the public. We were in the great big building down that Chris Nimlewill has now on the Fort George. That was our building. It was American Can Company building for many years. It was built in 1960, and then we took it over in 1983. So there's a lot of history in that. But again, people would drive by and had no idea of what we were doing inside of that. And lo and behold, for 35 years, we were building the gold standard of our industry right here in Little Astoria.
And where were things being shipped out of here to?
We shipped globally. This is canned salmon. We were putting on 200 different labels.
Oh, my gosh.
We would put Greek labels, Arabic labels, labels you couldn't even read. We were shipping to Ukraine. We were shipping to 50% of the entire pack went to the UK.
Wow.
They love their wild Alaska salmon in England, Belgium, Holland.
And keep going.
No, go ahead.
Well, at the end there, too, you said there were the number of trucks that were having to come in and out just to keep up with what the volume you were doing.
Yes, we had approximately 1,500 trucks, sea land containers incoming. So if you're going to deplete your product at the end of the year, you have to ship out 1,500 trucks, because Mother Nature is going to give you 1,500 more trucks next year. Yeah. So it's very busy. We did a lot of work for the USDC. But again, 200 different private labels, sockeye, red salmon, pink salmon, Kita salmon, no salt, low salt. There's a lot of different kinds of salmon out there. So
that, my mind is blown on that stat. I mean, I kind of knew, like, oh, all around the world, but to hear 200 different labels. So because you just mentioned a whole bunch of different kinds of salmon, I have to ask anybody even remotely related to the fishing industry. I always have to ask, what's your favorite kind of fish to eat?
Sockeye.
All right.
Primo number one.
There you go. From Alaska, right?
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
So talk about, you said you like to build things and you're crafty with your hands. Talk about the evolution of that. Were you tinkering things at home while you were working 35 years? Was this projects you would do for family and friends or just for yourself or what?
All of the above. But throughout the course of my learning from people and fabricating for Astoria Warehousing, for the fishing industry, you get in It's never a dull moment. There's always something that you could be building, whether it's mechanical or out of wood. I just took a liking to that. And I actually, my wife of 40 years now, when we were dating, I actually built her a rocking chair. And that's been probably 50 years ago. So I always had a love of rocking chairs because to me, they have a heartbeat. They do something. They move your soul. And being a baseball player, my son was a baseball player. He pitched down at Santa Clara. And this thought just came to me one day about building some more rocking chairs. And I thought, nobody's building them out of baseball bats. And so I actually went to the design patent company and got a design patent. And I got 3 trademarks and it was off and running. But unfortunately, it was a 50-50 because I was still running Astoria Warehousing and running Seattle. So long story short, once I retired, now I retired last year, now that I'm retired, I can put 100% into the supple rockers.
I love that. Now that I'm retired, I'm working full time.
Yeah, exactly. that's what I pick up too.
In case you're just joining, though, let me just introduce. This is Dan Supple with Supple Rockers. That's one of the trademarks. I see it
on
the shirts.
Yes, ma'am.
And I love, that was so poetic, that what you said about rocking chairs. That's just, it's beautiful. But I know you've been in the news a little bit. You've sold some rocking chairs to some pretty famous baseball players and others. You want to talk a little bit about that and how they found you and your reaction and delivering them?
Well, again, we started slow, just kind of taking baby steps with this thing. And we refined, there's a lot of geometry that goes into making a rocking chair, the balance, the visual, what it's going to look like sitting there, how much it's tipped back, inviting you to sit in it. Suppliers, we use Italian leather on the seat. We do all the hand stitching is wax thread from Maine. The bats are specifically cut for us back in Pennsylvania. They're actually made for supple rockers. They're back in Amish country. All of our suppliers, we ship out of PDX, SIVA Logistics ships them. We've got a great team. Polk and Patricia Riley have been with me and my wife Kim on supple rockers since the get-go. I just can't tell you, both of them are absolute magicians and they help us so much with all the artistic flair on, like on our ticket stubs and the things that we put on them. So,
oh my gosh, they sound so fun. So tell me, that what's the difference between a regular baseball bat then and the ones just made for your rockers?
Ours are essentially, they're the same, but they're like the handles are a little bit thicker. Okay. Because we need the strength. In that if a Major League Baseball player picked up our bats, first thing they would tell you is the handles are thicker. And again, that's for us. We worked with a company up in Seattle. They make axe handles. They actually make an axe bat. It's got an axe handle shaped on it. And we've actually got, it's one of our options for our rocking chairs. We can put bats with axe handles on them.
Oh,
they're
my
pretty
gosh.
Neat. Yeah.
So I know Mariano Rivera was one that you had that they asked a chair to be made when he retired. Are there any baseball players that have gotten these that you've been a part of hand delivering to them or presentation or anybody that one of your favorite players that now has one of these in their homes?
The Mariano Rivera is the shot heard around the world. There's videos on our website on that. It was absolutely unbelievable. Just out of the blue, the New York Yankees, her name was Debbie Timon, emailed us and said, can you put this logo on your rocker? We want to give it to a gentleman, a player that's retiring. And I knew immediately it was for Marta, and it was game on. It was game on. But most recently, a year and a half ago, Jamie Moyer, Hall of Fame pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, won the World Series with the Phillies. His wife, she purchased one for him for his 60th birthday. So got to spend all afternoon in there talking to them. And
oh, my gosh.
There were some people back. His dad was there. I hand-delivered that one. So it's just magic. And it's crazy where these things, the people that we get to meet, and they just have a knack for finding themselves on big stages.
That's so amazing. So you can customize them. But is that normal? Or do, like, when, if I go to go buy one, do I get just a standard unique chair?
No, our bread and butter is custom.
Okay.
It's absolutely custom. That ticket stub, we can transfer it. That's where Polk and Patricia work their magic. I get the information from you. What do you want on it? Not necessarily what you want it to look like, but we'll ask you, how do you want to feel?
Yeah.
Or who you're giving it to. What is it for? Is it for a retirement? Is it a birthday? And then we can start customizing the ticket stub, which is the back of the chair.
Yeah.
And again, that's where Polk and Patricia can help me with the magic to turn that into a customized.
Yeah. I love it.
So we do want to mention, because Jeff Daly was here right before we went on the air, helping us with our studio setup. And you and he have something you're working on together that's pretty cool. You want to just mention that really fast?
Yeah, we do. I was surprised to see Jeff here. I've seen him here quite a bit in the last couple months. Jeff came up with the idea of making salt and pepper shakers out of the cork cedar floats that the gill netters here used in the river for 100 years. So he proposed the idea to Supple Rockers, and we've been playing with it for the last couple months now. And we've got it pretty well dialed in. We laser engrave pretty much there. Again, they're customizable. They can have anything. It can have your company logo. It can have your name on them. But we've outfitted Steve Fick's distillery, and they're on the tables down there. They look great.
They're really cool looking.
I love it.
They're big, but they're cool.
I love the idea of this and the rockers. It just kind of imprints some memories too, right? It gives people that opportunity of giving that really unique gift. And then to know that it's also made by such a small team, pretty impressive. How do people find Supple Rockers? On the website, on the internet? What do they do?
Pretty much website.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supplerockers.com?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, yes, there we go.
That's easy.
I didn't even need to ask Google.
So I feel like there's still like a dozen questions we could ask. So, but I want to end. I want to come back to baseball. I was going to ask, like, why do you stay here? That's her favorite question to end on. But favorite baseball players? Are you still a Baltimore fan?
Yeah, I am. I'm still a Baltimore fan. I'm not a huge historian. Like, I can't sit here and rattle off stats from, the 1930s. But, the Lou Gehrigs and the Roberto Clementes and those. But I have vivid memories of the Orioles. They actually came out to play the Seattle Mariners when they were the Pilots, when we had just moved back. They played there for 1 year, and we actually got to go up and watch our Orioles play here in Seattle. It wasn't Six Stadium that they had. So, I'll always be an Orioles fan.
Well, being a Mets fan, I realize the same. Like, you only get them a certain number of times to go up in Seattle and watch them. Thank you so much. Your chairs are amazing. Your work is amazing. And what a great life you've had. And we're glad that you're still here in this community making it a better place.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Thanks to you and Kim and the Rileys as well. So keep it up.
Rockers. Go make some mystery. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.